Good morning, diners and travelers. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig.
Yeah, a little bit of weekly sunshine in a world of food, wine, and travel. We look forward to talking to you. We hope you look forward to listening to us.
Next up is, first of all, I never knew the word Trackelmans. I did look it up, and I think we talk about it on this interview. But I'll tell you, the product that we're going to be talking about is, so scrumptious.
So let's let it speak for itself.
Well, we are totally in love with the new product, and we have the producer of the product on the line, T.R. Durham, and his business is actually called Trackelmans and Smokery, and it's located in, of all places, Ann Arbor, Michigan. Welcome, T.R.
Thank you very much, Ann.
We're going to be talking about your business, but we're also going to be talking about this interesting cookbook, the Smoked Seafood Cookbook, Easy, Innovative Recipes from America's Best Fish Smokery.
But let's get things sorted out first.
I mean, first of all, I want to say I believe that since we tasted it, that it's America's best smokery.
I agree, but it's sort of like, it's really interesting because if you remember, Shakespeare had a seacoast in Bohemia, which is in the middle of Europe. It's now in Czechoslovakia. And the last I heard, Ann Arbor was not on any large body of water.
Certainly not seawater.
So how come, T.R.?
The T.R. started in Maine, right?
Oh, okay. Yeah, but
how come we're in Ann Arbor instead of Maine or Massachusetts, where we started out, actually?
And where do you catch all the salmon in the Ann Arbor River?
Oh, you know, if I had to rely on any fish that I caught here, we would have been out of business a long time ago.
So what's the combination? You buy your raw materials from?
Well, we get some of our salmon from the Canadian Bay of Fundy, but over the last 3 years, we've actually been getting most of our salmon, particularly for the coal smoke salmon that you tried, from Scotland and some from Ireland. And it usually gets here within, say, 2 or 3 days out of the water, and it's just been an absolutely superb starting place for our products.
Well, we have to jump back further. I mean, you started out your working career as a school teacher.
That's correct, yep.
Now, there's something's missing in this transition. Could you just explain how you went from that, from being a school teacher in Maine to being a smoker in Ann Arbor, Michigan?
Well, I think some of it is just, sort of jumping from one kind of interest that was parallel with some others after a time. I loved the teaching for a long time, but always had fantasy, often shared with some of my colleagues, of starting something like a bar or small restaurant or some kind of barbecue place or a brewery. And I think at one point I just started doing this as a backyard basement hobby after spending some time in Ireland and Scotland. And after a sabbatical, it was clear that my preference would be to just keep doing this year-round rather than just doing it for the holidays.
Can I quote you here? This is a totally different cookbook. I am a recovering academic, having spent 25 years presenting ideas to the eager young minds of America before deciding that rubbing dry salt cure on fish might be better suited to my temperament and possibly more productive.
It has been more productive, although that was written after teaching, say, during the Reagan years, and since I was teaching environmental studies and things like business ethics and that was not the most hospitable environment, I would say.
Now, back to the salmon, because mm-hmm. Anne and I were talking. She was telling me that in your previous conversation, she had picked up the fact that quite a lot of your raw material fish is actually farmed.
Oh, yes. We use a little bit of the wild Pacific salmon when it's in good condition and affordable, and that's usually during the summer, but it's a very limited window. And in fact, for most of our coal-smoked salmons, in any event, I think the Atlantic salmon is vastly superior just because of the way the oil and fat is distributed throughout the flesh, rather than being sort of subcutaneous with the Pacific wild salmons. And I think that's been the big factor just in determining what kind of salmon we use. And the only way you can get Atlantic salmon on a reliable, high-quality basis is from farms. The important thing, I think, for many people to realize is that farming practices have been transformed in the last, say, 8 to 10 years. There's still a huge range of quality in farming operations, but in Ireland and the Shetlands in Scotland and Norway in particular, and in the Bay of Fundy, in some operations, the feed, the location, the cleaning practices, the harvesting practices, everything have just been dramatically changed from what was sort of the, routine protocols maybe 10 years ago.
Now, you also have, in all of those areas you mentioned, you also have two other things going. The farmers also have two other things going for them. Water that's very deep and water that's very tidal, so there's a significant amount of change in the water that occurs naturally as well.
Exactly. In the Bay of Fundy, of course, they have 30 to 40 foot tides, and it's extremely cold water, even in the summer. So you have a lot of highly oxygenated water. You don't have the ecological impact that a lot of people.
Yeah, see, that's why it's not politically correct anymore in the sustainable community, is the ecological impact, right?
That has been one of the criticisms, but, there are more places now in Scotland and in the Shetlands and Ireland where they're actually doing certified organic salmon, and they also have a separate category of sustainable salmons that are monitored, audited very closely by groups like Natureland out of Germany and the UK Soil Conservancy for feed and things like that. So, and the location of the pens that, where the salmon are farmed, have been changed from, say, more static settings like estuaries and locks into more deep sea current locations. And the density of the salmon in the pens has been dropped very dramatically.
Okay,
so
that's a good thing.
Most of the problems that people have rightly associated with many of the farming operations, I would say 10 to 12 years ago, have been not universally and uniformly, but in many cases addressed very successfully. I think there's still ongoing efforts, but you can actually see it in the quality of the salmon that we get now.
So you think that the criticism would be turned around?
Well, we're buying Atlantic salmon, farmed Atlantic salmon from our chosen seafood supplier all the time, and
Copper River salmon.
It's a very satisfactory product.
I agree, and with especially for fresh salmon that you're going to cook or roast, or the Copper River Kings, and I actually like the sockeye a great deal. Distinctive flavor, but for the coal smoke products in particular, because of the difference in the way the oils are distributed, those fish don't make it as good a product in terms of the texture and the mouthfeel.
I see.
They can be very nicely flavored, but I've tried here for, I don't know, maybe 5 or 8 years come up with a satisfactory result, or one that even, comes close to what we do with Atlantic salmon, and just, this is all in the judgment of our customers, doesn't come close. So in the end, we stick primarily with the Atlantic salmon for those.
We have a great texture in yours. I mean, it's wonderful, because it can become so icky. Tell us, you've mentioned cold smoking a number of times. Can you briefly explain the difference between hot and cold? Well, I mean, they're obvious,
sure.
I guess.
Yeah, glad to. The coal smoking is, the cured salmon is smoked at basically a room temperature of, say, 70 degrees or below for a period of time that can be 12 to 18 to more hours. It doesn't cook the salmon. The salmon is cured with salt and maybe some sugar, which changes the structure of the protein so that it's a more resilient, pliable kind of fish, and then it gets air-dried as it gets smoked. Hot smoking is actually a more complicated process in that usually the fish is brine-cured rather than dry-cured, which is what we do with the coal smoke product. It's brine-cured, then it's coal-smoked for a while, and then you step the temperature up to a low cooking temperature for a while, and then you set it up to about 180 to 190 degrees so that it ends up being cooked and it has a flaky, chunky kind of texture.
Ah, so that's the difference. So that's the difference. Okay. Now, I have to ask one more question, and then we should also let you talk a little bit about your cookbook. But why do you think yours is so good. I mean, it came up in conversation that somebody said this is the best smoked salmon they've ever tasted. I can't remember one that I liked near as well in my own taste memory. So what makes yours so good?
Well, that's great to hear. It's the kind of comments that really keep us in business, I think, and provides a lot of the psychic income that we have. I think there are two things. One is we really are very careful about sourcing the salmon and using salmon only when it really comes in top quality. And the second thing that we do that I don't think anybody else really does to the same extent is we do a hand rub dry cure. Rather than a brining cure. The brining cure is the commercial curing method of choice because it's quick, it's very predictable, it gets the legally required amount of salt into the flesh very quickly, and in this business, like a lot of others, time is money, and so their turnaround time is very short. Our cure, we generally cure for 36 to 48, and for our seasoned cures, up to 72 hours or more, refrigerated after the hand rub dry cure. And I think in the end, that tends to capture the flavor of the salmon and develops a texture that is very hard to get with brine curing. Beyond that, I don't know, but I think
the
those are the decisive things.
Wonderful.
Yeah, I think what happens is you care.
Well, we have to care. We're a very small business, and we're really only as good as our next batch, so we have to stay on top of it constantly. And we also have a lot of customers who've been with us, for mail order customers and now retail customers, who have been incredibly loyal and supportive over the last, say, 12 to 15 years, so we have to care about them, too. So it translates into a lot of attention to the product quality. And when we have stuff that doesn't come out right, we just throw it out. We don't push it on.
Okay, so you must have a website, because we now have people's mouth watering for some of this stuff. So
right.
before we go off onto another subject, what's your website, T.R.?
The website is just www.tracklements.com.
Yeah, I think you better spell that.
I was just about to. Yeah, Trackelments, TRACKLEMENTS.
Okay.
And so there's an R after the T. A lot of people think of it as tacklements, and they think it might have to do with
fishing
lures and lines and poles, but it's not. Yeah.
Since you brought it up, you have a section where you explain Trackelments. We were talking about it before. It's a bit of whimsy, isn't it?
Whimsy?
Yeah.
On our part?
Yes.
I would say so, yeah. it's actually a word that I learned about reading Dorothy Hartley and just fell in love with the kind of the sound and the look of it. And originally, when we started this business in Massachusetts, I had an idea that we might expand into mustards and chutneys and things like that. And in addition to the salmon and other smoked fish, so I wanted something that was a little more encompassing than, say, the fish smokehouse.
Yeah.
So, and actually now we're starting to, I have some very good friends here in Ann Arbor who are interested in doing some mustards and chutneys and relishes, and I'm hoping that, say, within the next year we might have a very nice line
of
these that are made by a couple people who have been making them, first at their mother's side in India and now on a regular basis on their own here in Ann Arbor. So we'll see how that goes.
And in the meantime, there's a wonderful cookbook that goes along with this, which is the way we were first introduced.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called, sweetheart?
The Smoked Seafood Cookbook. Easy, innovative recipes from America's best fish smokery. And the reason you wrote this, TR, is because everybody kept saying, what can we do besides plop this on a bagel?
Well, I think that was certainly prepared the ground for this, because with more and more questions like that, and especially, having moved to Ann Arbor and gone into retail more than wholesale and mail order, we had so many customers coming in with those questions, or in many cases offering their own suggestions about some things they had tried and liked and they wanted to pass on. And so over a 10-year period, we collected a large number of recipes or sort of suggested recipes or sketched-out recipes, and then we started, my wife in particular, started cooking out of a lot of more ethnic and national cuisines, represented by different cookbooks, and then we would try adding different kinds of smoked fish, either the salmon or the haddock in particular, or the mackerel, the trout, to some of these things. And again, over time, she came up with a number of very excellent recipes.
You've got chili with smoked fish.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that because, especially with 12 inches of snow on the ground here now and 10-degree temperatures, it's sort of a surprising feature of a smoked seafood cookbook that really a lot of the nice cook-with recipes are great for this time of year. The chilies, the chowders, say the smoked haddock or fin and haddie lasagna, those are some of our favorites. And there's a lot of interesting variety in those, too, ranging from, say, the Moroccan-style North African harira with smoked haddock or smoked cod to a Thai bouillabaisse with smoked fish to just a chili or New England chowder with smoked fish. And all of these recipes can be done very nicely without smoked fish, which I think is an important feature of them. But this adding the smoked fish adds a certain kind of subtle nuance to them that can be surprisingly haunting and addictive at the same time.
Yeah, and you do have this section in the book, a primer on do-it-yourself smoking, which mm-hmm. looks sort of intimidating to me. I was thinking of it, but I thought, no, I don't think so.
Why would we do that when we can get this wonderful product from TR? Why should we try and reinvent his skill set? That somehow seems so like
that's exactly the response we're aiming at.
you don't keep a dog and bark yourself, as they say.
TR, this has been such a pleasure. I mean, getting to know you and as I said, I'm attached to Ann Arbor anyhow, since
right.
I went to school there. And I can just see how this would fit into that wonderful academic ethnic mix in that town.
It is a wonderful town for this.
Yeah.
Absolutely, for exactly the reasons you mentioned, Ann.
Yes.
Absolutely.
So we help you make it through the winter. And
that I don't miss, the 12 inches of snow.
No, no.
I remember a friend of mine from Detroit said, Detroit is the grayest place in the world in winter. So a little bit of salmon sunshine
will do very
makes,
well.
Makes a difference. Thank you so much, T.R.,
so.
For joining
you,
us.
Thank you, and if you ever get to Ann Arbor, and I hope you will sometime soon, be sure to drop by the smokery.
I will. Bye-bye.
Bye.